Thank you for calling the California Department of Public Health Vital Records. Your call may be monitored for quality assurance purposes.
We'll do a thing called freedom.
Is you gonna press the flesh, Pappy? Have a little politic?
I'll press you up against
you. You little son bitch. You don't tell your Pappy how to cut the electorate. We ain't one at a time in here. We're mass communicating.
Warning. You're listening to the Agenda 31 podcast with Corey Ibe and Todd McGreevy. Agenda 31 exposes government fraud, theft, and deception. Agenda 31 endorses peaceful enforcement of the Bill of Rights by the people of the several states. Agenda 31 explains how United States citizens have forsaken their capacity to protect their own rights. Corey and Todd engage with local, state, and federal government on powerful issues of identity, property rights, law, oaths of office, taxation, privacy, and more. Their approach is rooted in the very specific legal foundation of state citizenship. Listeners of the Agenda 31 podcast are challenged to take the lowest risks with the highest rewards. Your hosts want to know, what's your strategy to make a difference? Due to the unique division of political authority in the United States, U.S. citizens are residents in every state and should not attempt to copy the strategies employed by the hosts of the Agenda 31 broadcast without first consulting legal counsel. Enjoy.
You are going to change America in a way that usually only war and fluoride can. War and fluoride can. War and fluoride can.
It's time for us to become private central banking heretics, to stop believing that this is the way life is supposed to be, because it isn't.
The courts said that there are clearly two governments in each state. We have a state government and a federal government. The state government that we see today is a franchise of the federal government, as I mentioned before, by voluntary consent of the people, but that doesn't mean the original state government doesn't exist.
Self-determination isn't for everybody.
Well, that's exactly the whole point. The 14th Amendment protects U.S. citizens from the several states, but provides no protection from the federal government.
U.S. citizens have several different qualities. One, under Title V, they're considered federal personnel. You can trace back the foundation of their identity to a document the government owns.
Wake up! A state-issued birth record is government property.
You know what? There's going to be 50 different ways to skin this cat.
Today, we don't know. We're like a hotel that checks you in but never checks you out.
That's not courage. That's a mafia-style sit-down to divvy up what's good for the bosses.
You know, you're going to have to shut up or I'm going to have you arrested.
Hey, how does it feel to be a Republican right now?
It's a hoax. It's a big hoax.
It's a little bit overreaching to think there's going to be 3,100 people trying to pay attention like we do.
Why don't we devalue Social Security numbers? Why not require financial institutions not to use Social Security numbers so that there's no longer the incentive to steal Social Security numbers?
The Social Security number is absolutely critical. We need them and we have to use them. But we have to treat them as an identifier.
Yes, we'll make slaves out of all of you.
Very much part of Agenda 21, in my humble opinion. And it's a ramp up to a United Nations September convention that's coming. It's going to be Agenda 21 on steroids.
Yeah, California is crazy.
It is.
I mean, it's out of control.
The U.S. sitting senator is suggesting using RICO laws to be applied to global warming skeptics.
We're not policing the world. We're not policing the world. We're not policing the world. No, we don't have a military-industrial complex.
Only a state citizen can travel around without license plates, without registration, and without a driver's license, and not intend to break the law.
Because you can't have prosperity if you're constantly under the risk of a terrorist attack.
Who the government? Who the terrorists?
And welcome, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to Agenda 31. This is episode 53. Is it 53, Corey?
It's 53, Todd.
It's episode 53 on October 31st, 2015. Happy Halloween.
Yes. Happy Halloween to everyone.
I have some ghouls behind me now. I'm on the road traveling, Corey. This is Todd McGreevy, your co-host.
And this is Corey. I'm firmly planted in my seat here, broadcasting from Los Angeles, California.
And I'm broadcasting from the Treasure Coast on the off the right off the Atlantic here in Central Florida, Corey. South Central Florida, yeah. And we don't have our usual rig, so this sounds a little cruddy. I apologize, but we're going to plow ahead and mark some time here this week because it's been a while since Corey and I have actually had a show together.
Yeah, it's good to be on the air with you at the same time, and we've got some just fantastic deconstruction of a letter. This is real-world direct engagement with government officials, so it's really worth staying tuned to the show.
What do you want to start with, Corey? You want to start with listener Jared, or do you want to start with your...
Let's start with listener Jared, then we'll move into the letter, deconstruct
Jared,
the letter.
Jared's out in Nebraska, Jared Hall, a friend of the show. And he's on the Twitters, and I should find his Twitter account sooner than later. He's very active. Encourage you to check out his feed on Twitter. We'll find it here in a minute.
It's Jared Frederick Hall on Twitter.
Yeah, and he's lighting it up about the state citizenship discussion out in Nebraska. And I noticed from his Twitter feed, Corey, he's ordered a hard copy of the purported original Constitution for Nebraska. He's found it online. He's linked it online at his Twitter account. And he's starting with the basics that you and I have talked about for some time. You know, there's going to be 50 ways to skin this cat. And he's not, you know.
Exactly.
If you're going to be a state citizen, you better understand the history of your state. Otherwise, don't try and be one.
That's right. Yeah, in order to be a state citizen, you have to know how your state works. So this is a fascinating letter from Jared that he received from the Social Security Administration.
Before we go there, Corey, I want to go to the first thing he did, which was shoot a note to one of the state senators there.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Remember that? He sent a note
to
him. And he called him Congressman Moorfield, M-O-R-F-E-L-D, and that was a mistake. It was kind of funny. He said, thanks. I wish I was a congressman. I would get paid a lot more. This Adam Moorfield replied to him. It's kind of funny. But Jared goes on to say, I'd like to ask about what it means to be a citizen of the state of Nebraska and what rights it grants me. Is there a difference in being a citizen of the state of Nebraska and being a recognized citizen of the federal government of the United States of America? If so, which rights come first, my state citizenship rights or the federal government granted rights? May I lose my citizenship as Nebraskan under the state constitution, or must it be listed as a citizen of the United States of America? A little disjointed, not 100% clear on where he's going, lots of homographs in there. But, you know, it's A for effort. Absolutely. You know what I mean?
You know, and I tell you what, when I first started dealing with the common law ID and trying to explain this, my writings to this day still sound disjointed quite often because it's complicated. The government is lying. They're using homographs. And in my opinion, they're absolutely violating the constitutional restrictions on creating a state within a state, at least here in California. I mean, they openly claim that the federal state operates within the borders of California. And so it is confusing, you know, but certainly A-plus for effort for Jared.
And for what it's worth, it does count, especially when sending an email. To go back and read it another time or three times before you hit send. I mean, I type a lot, and I force myself to go back and read stuff two and three times before I hit send, and I always find dumb little things I miss. Dumb. All right. So you, everybody's communications will improve, especially if you're going to engage with GovCo. Read it two or three times before you hit send. But well done. He gets the topics on the table, and the response is worth reading. You have it in front of you. Want me to go with it?
Yeah, you go with it. I can't find it.
Okay, so I'll put this up at the show notes. He says, hi, Jared, thanks for the email. I wish I was a congressman. I would get paid a lot more. You are a citizen of the United States and a resident of the state of Nebraska. Individual states do not have their own citizenship states.
individual states do not have their own citizenship status. Only residency for certain purposes, such as tuition and registering to vote. Let me reread that. Individual states do not have their own citizenship status, only residency for certain purposes, such as tuition and registering to vote. Different privileges are afforded to residents of the state by virtue of being a resident, have different requirements. For instance, for purposes of voting, once you have a legal domicile, in quotes, so presence in the state, you can register to vote. So some kind of meaningful presence you would call a home. But for purposes of in-state tuition, they have much more strict residency requirements. If you leave the state and do not meet certain requirements, you can lose certain privileges such as in-state tuition. Corey, did you know you might not be eligible for in-state tuition as one of the people of the several states?
Yes.
Yeah,
because the only way to get the in-state tuition is if you sign a document saying you're not from California.
That's right. Long story short, you cannot be a citizen of a state, according to State Senator Adam Moorfield of the 46th District. You can only be a citizen of the United States and a resident of a state. Hope this helps. Thanks, Adam.
Well, what that does is that that idea that the states don't have citizens of their own is freaking nuts. I mean, it's insane to think that a state could exist that doesn't have people in it. But if the law presumes that the original states upon which the federal government derives its authority doesn't have any people, that's awful convenient for the federal government, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm fascinated by this guy's response. I really am. And this is a great example of low risk, high reward. Jared reached out to the state senator in the district where, you know, geographically he is. I think he might have met the guy once or twice or something. You know, he's very polite, thanks him for his service, you know. I mean, we're not – these are adversaries. They're not enemies. And flush this out, this, frankly, ignorance. I don't know if it's ignorance or if it's just, you know, maliciousness, but on its face, it is ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
Only a citizen of the United States and a resident of a state. I mean, it is the servitude status that has been bestowed upon you when you have a driver's license, a voting registration card, social security number, birth certificate, all of the things that you subscribe to is what he's talking about. He's presuming, of course, you're on the, you know, you are in the federal zone here. He's been read in, even as a state senator.
Right. And you know, you think about it just a little bit deeper about the whole idea of not being a citizen of one of the several states. Now I would encourage Jared to mail him a letter, mail that same letter, that same senator a letter through postal service using the 3-cent postal rates set by the 37th Congress, and explain to the senator that one of the liabilities that was inherited by the United States Postal Service was to deliver mail to the several states and carry that mail within the several states. And the rates for that are set at, by the 37th Congress. So my question, I guess, would be, exactly when did those states no longer have citizens? What was the exact date that they didn't? Because the post office assumes they did. The Supreme Court in Texas v. White assumes that those states have citizens. I'm really curious how he would answer that. This is one of those times when recognizing that when you're dealing with law or the government, words are everything, and it's all about splitting hairs on words. And I get the sense that maybe this senator doesn't even know the real history of our country.
I'm fascinated by just the way he's approached it so matter-of-factly that, you know, long story short, you cannot be a citizen of a state. I mean, just, you know, you can only be a citizen of the United States and a resident of a state. It's not apples to apples, but it kind of reminds me of when I was a little kid and my parents would say, this is the liquor cabinet, hands off, you can't go in there.
And of course, that made me just want to go into it even more by being told I couldn't go there. When you tell somebody, you know, long story short, you can't be a citizen of a state. When you know, like, what? I'm being told not to go there. You know, no, I think I want to go there even more now. Because this guy told me this.
Right.
Really?
The government's telling you straight up you can't be a citizen of a state, only a resident of a state.
That's amazing.
It is really, I found this. I found the picture that he sent. Deconstructing this is really amazing.
I have backup on all this. It wasn't just a screenshot that could be fabricated. I've got emails can be fabricated too, but this looks legit to me.
It does, yeah. And based on his previous engagements, I have good faith that this is a genuine response that he received.
Yeah, and go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that the reason why, you know, never ask a man for a yes when his job depends on the answer being no.
Yeah.
And everybody in government today, anybody in government today, their job depends on the answer being no, you cannot be a citizen of a state.
That's right.
Because everybody in government, they are 100% dependent on you staying in the system. You staying a resident. If just a small percentage of people stood up and defended their rights to be a citizen of one of the several states, that ends up, the federal government is leaked into so many places in your life that as a state citizen, you begin to recognize what they're doing and not being involved in it. And it would only take a small percentage of people to have a profound effect on government as far as government being able to pay its bills. When the federal government were, if the federal government were to recognize that, oh, yeah, you know, you certainly, Jared, you can be a citizen of your state, and Corey, you're a citizen of California. Your government takes care of you. We have nothing to do with you. That's how the Constitution works. If they were to say that, every program they have would collapse.
Uh-huh.
They are absolutely 100% dependent. Their retirement, their future, their house payment, how they put gas in their car, every government employee out there, his answer is always going to be, no, you can't be a citizen of a state. You have to be a resident, so I'm in charge, and I get my retirement. That's how it is with every government within our country, local, everywhere. They're all dependent on you being a resident.
It's almost like, can I take this plug out of my skull and unplug from your system? No. Keep that plug in. It must stay in, resident. Don't unplug it. Do not think about unplugging that from your skull. He replies to the senator, by doing a simple search and find of the Nebraska State Constitution, I find the rights of a, quote, person, end quote, being referred to as the rights of a citizen. This seems to be conflicting with your reply email about how I am simply a resident of Nebraska, as apparently there is no such thing as a citizen of Nebraska. He's trying to say, anyway. That was his reply to Senator Adam Moorfield, and the response was, it's not conflicting. It is just referring to citizens of the United States in the state constitution. Take care, Jared. Thanks for getting in touch. Sent from his iPhone. On the fly. Counseling about one of the most complex subject matters on the planet, American administrative and state citizenship, from his iPhone. That guy is a talented legislator, Corey.
Yes. Very much so.
Wow. Kudos to Mr. Jared Hall there for taking the low risk, high reward and taking on his own strategy to make a difference in Nebraska. He's heating up. And in addition, he sent a letter, which we don't have a copy of the letter he sent to the SSA, the Social Security Administration, but we do have a tweet on the Twitters where he said something about, I think I just referred to the Social Security Administration pogrom in my letter, so I can't wait to read it. But do you have the reply, Corey?
Let's see, the reply, the one that was on Twitter?
Oh, the SSA, no, the one that I replied to.
Oh, yeah.
I've got it right here in front of me, printed out.
I am looking for his reply. Jared Hall, let me get that in.
So Jared is going down the path that Corey went down, and that is to engage Social Security Administration about the nature of the number getting canceled that is associated with the titles that have been ascribed to him, his first, any first, middle, and last name that happens to be the same as his given family name. Many of you listen to the show were given a Social Security number as an identifier without your consent, and somebody filled out an application on your behalf at the time. And I know people that filled out their own applications as young adults to get to set up a Social Security leave. Part of the Ponzi scheme that was bestowed upon us by the New Deal. And do you got it yet, Corey?
I have not found it yet.
Okay, so it was a reply.
It was an email, right? It was an email?
The old super efficient emails, yes, from a guy that had his name email, not his actual name.
Oh, so there we go. I found it. Yes.
Yeah. It's, we'll have it up at the show notes.
You want me to read this off? I mean, I think a couple of things in here are really interesting.
Yeah, please, go.
You're referring to the letter that Jared received from Social Security, right?
That is correct.
Yeah, and, I'll just read it because it's fairly short, but I thought quite interesting. It says, thank you for contacting the Social Security Administration. We apologize for the delay in answering your inquiry. We regret any inconvenience this may have caused. When someone has applied for and been assigned a Social Security number based on a validly signed application, the Social Security Administration may not cancel or destroy that record. That paragraph, I don't think we really need to read more. There's a lot there. But that one paragraph, I think, is just the crux to dealing with Social Security.
Another look underneath the tent right there, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they use the term a validly signed application. Well, I think if you were to look up what makes an application validly signed, what that would be would certainly require a meeting of the minds. And if all the liabilities that were incurred by signing up for Social Security you were not aware of, and if you knew you didn't have to sign up for Social Security when you did sign that, being unaware of all the political liabilities to it, then it's not a validly signed application. If you were unaware that you didn't even have to identify yourself as the person they told you you need to identify yourself as, and then you sign saying, yes, that is me, then I think that's another element to show that the application was never validly signed. So the way they worded that is really interesting in a response to Social Security, focusing on the application having never been signed because there was not a meeting of the minds, having never been signed validly, and couldn't warrant the destruction of the record. That would be real.
You are out of the womb 90 days, kicking and screaming, excuse me, and your parents register and complete an application to ascribe a number to a name associated with this infant. When your parents get you your Social Security number, Corey, is that validly applied, validly signed application?
You know, that's an interesting concept because, when you're really young, your parents do have the authority to do things for you in both common law and statutory law.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the idea that once you reach the age of majority, there's statutory laws, that's the age of 18. In common law is quite a bit younger, is really more when you were ready, but most often when you were 13, 14 years old, you began to carry a lot more responsibility than 13-year-olds do today. I think a case could easily be made at any time that Social Security, unless you absolutely agree that you are signing up as property of the government, you're going to identify yourself as federal personnel, so that way anytime you go out and earn a living, you now have to pay taxes because federal personnel from day one have always had to pay taxes. The current income tax that everyone pays, it's not really an income tax. It's easy to find what it's really called. It's an excise tax. And an excise tax is not an income tax under the Constitution, even though they call it an income tax. It's an excise tax because you're using government property to earn your living. And that government property is your birth record, the Social Security account, the Federal Reserve System, all those different things you're using. So if you're not using that, then, you know, which is the way people did before these programs were about, the federal government didn't have the authority to tax people directly. If they want to tax people directly, it has to be done via capitation tax. And that's just not how the current income tax is running. And I think if more people were aware and take, I got another comment the other day, Todd, from Lewis, who is somebody here locally here in Southern California, on my Facebook page. He posted a copy of his common law ID that he created, and I can see right behind it he got his Apostille certificate. And then it looks like he sent the Apostille and his common law ID off to get another certification. I can't tell if it's from the federal government or not, but the comment is, great podcast, here's my ID, and kudos. The more people that figure out, once you make a common law ID, that the whole game is you defend that person. Because that's the person that the Constitution protects. It does not protect a state-issued birth record. And that's the whole game. So I think we're on the very leading edge of a wave of just awakening. How important it is for the type of ID you carry. You know, you've heard that commercial, what's in your wallet? Well, it better not be a state-issued ID card.
Good call. I like that.
Yeah.
They've gotten Jennifer Garner's lately gotten to saying what's in your wallet. They get
wow.
These really sexy stars on there to talk about this stuff, man, to keep everybody just so mesmerized. It's quite a hypnotic deal they got rolling. This letter,
I love it. It's powerful.
It's very powerful. It goes on to say the Privacy Act of 1974 authorizes agencies to maintain in their records any information about an individual that is relevant and necessary to accomplish a purpose of the agency that is required by law. I just love that sentence. The Congress enacts an act called the Privacy Act, which authorizes the agency to maintain in the records any information to accomplish a purpose that is required by law. So it's like, you ever heard of object-oriented coding?
Yeah.
Python or anything like that, you know? It's like, you know, one thing refers to another, which triggers another thing, and there's little subsets and all that. That's what this is all about. This is just all just
of course
object-oriented bullshit. So then it goes on, SSA is required by law to establish and maintain records of wages and self-employment income for each individual whose work is covered under the program. I love that. The program. You're on the program, dude. Come on.
Yeah.
You're on the program. Get with the program. We got to do this. It's in the program. The SSN is considered relevant and necessary for that record-keeping purpose. Consequently, valid Social Security numbers are permanently part of the records of Social Security. I mean, what a triangulation of there's nothing we can do here about the number. It's going to stay in play. You know, it's not an end of the road for somebody who wants to move to a state citizenship domicile status. You've proven that. I mean, you're not going to ever get acknowledgement from the Social Security Administration that they don't consider the number. They no longer consider the number their property. They own it, lock, stock, and barrel. Always will.
Yeah, it's theirs. Any money in that Social Security account, that's theirs. Any liability, it's all theirs. They own it.
Oh yeah. And the folly is that we're led to believe. Thank you. This is we're led to believe through the debates on stage where they talk about the Social Security and they Christie pontificates how it was stolen from us, and the Washington Post writes an article. Everybody's focused on it. now, which is good because it's a football in the air being thrown around, and everyone's going, oh, rather than everybody stopping and going, why are we throwing this shitty-ass football around? Why won't we stop throwing this football around and quit playing in the Social Security game? That question is never broached. Even Rand Paul doesn't, you know, because he wants, you know, he's purportedly trying to get elected, so he's going to have to pander to the common denominator of course everybody wants to get their money out of Social Security. So we should all continue to keep worrying about that number.
The thing that's just amazing to me, Todd, like you say, when you see some of these debates, the stuff they talk about, if you're a state citizen, you understand that the entire scheme is just BS. Everything on the debates is BS. Nobody's talking about any real solutions. Nobody's bringing up the 6% that the Federal Reserve steals for every dollar that the government borrows on our behalf. No one's talking about the government's requirement to print the currency called United States notes. Even though it's only $300 million that's authorized, they're not even printing that. All of those things have massive effect on the country and on the economy and on your personal life, and have an effect on restraining government properly. And that's why nobody ever talks about it. The part that gets me is how effective the brainwashing has been. They've been able to brainwash people into the idea that this is how it's supposed to be, that when people fought a war for independence and they preserved those freedoms the best they could in the Constitution, that the idea, all we have to do is wait for a few of these generations to go away. We'll say that none of these states have citizens anymore, and only the federal government, which we put in a box to keep away from the people, is the only one that has citizens anymore, according to the government. And this is where the magic, I don't use that term often, but I think it's nearly magical, that one of the politicians in our history created the subscribed oath of office. That to bind these people down, because obviously they're all going to say no. And so the idea is moving forward, when it gets to this point, when it's this bad, when the entire government operates off of a facade that they require you to be a part of, when you decide you don't want to be a part of that anymore and you want to move to another legitimate jurisdiction, the only way that you have to that I'm aware of is to bind the government down with their oath, because every single person that works for government has to sign an oath of office, especially if they're coming to take your property away or anything. And it's a state citizen that has the standing to enforce the terms that have been proffered by every single government employee to honor and it's called a promissory oath. That's literally what it's called in legal dictionaries. But it's a promise that they will do something in order to hold that office. And so the oath of office is so important for everybody that you deal with, which is what my plan is with the judge here in Orange County.
And I want to get to the judge in 1 second, but to reflect on this Nebraska thing, what I hear you saying is that the oath of office doesn't really apply to residents, and that's why the guy who took the oath wants to tell you that you got to be a resident.
Exactly. And the 14th Amendment citizen. I mean, if you stand in that area that they want you to stand in, politically speaking, and that is using a state-issued birth record, participating in Social Security, saying you're a U.S. citizen and then a resident of Nebraska, you literally have waived virtually all of the protections of the Constitution, and the only protections you have are just what the government decides is beneficial for them at that particular moment. Which really just comes down to the government's going to take as much as they possibly can until the entire nation revolts. I mean, that's literally the only thing that's keeping them at bay, is the idea that people would revolt. Otherwise, they can do anything they want if you identify yourself as a participant in Social Security, you identify yourself as a state-issued birth record, and identify yourself as a resident. You do those three things. And, I mean, obviously there's a lot more you can do to cause yourself a harm to your political standing. But just those three alone are enough to identify you as simply property of the government. You don't have access to the constitutional provisions that restrict government like the people do. And the people, in the way that the Constitution was framed, they have no obligation to the federal government. So it's important to eliminate those obligations to the federal government and engage, like Jared has, with Social Security.
And Corey, two episodes ago, we talked about the letter you got back from the Superior Court, saying that, the questions that you thought were asked in the courtroom never happened because of the transcript. Did you send a request for the transcript?
I sent a request for the transcript. I've not had any response yet. I also have mailed off a copy of the oath for Charles Margines, who subscribed the oath, because in his letter here that he mailed to me, it sure seems that he is absolutely violating his oath, and I think I can prove that through mailing him a letter using non-domestic mail that is a liability of the United States Postal Service. They have to carry it, but it runs outside their system, and it's a liability they inherited from the United States Post Office Department. And I'll be able to mail a letter after I get the oath back from the Secretary of State, which I'll get the notes up and make sure that we have a copy of what I requested so people can see what that is, how to get the oath. What I'm going to do is get a copy of Margine's oath of office. It's a certified copy that comes from the California Secretary of State. It's located in the notary division. So it took me, I'm telling you, Todd, when I first tried to find the oath of office for a judge, it took me a month to figure it out.
Wow.
I called the courts. I called everywhere. And, I had government employees tell me that it's an oath that they just take. You're not allowed to have the subscribed copy. It's something that's big. So if you're listening to this show right now and you learned and you're in California and you learned that all you have to do is contact the Secretary of State Notary Division, and for $6 you can get a certified copy of an oath of office for any judge in California. That is a month's worth of work. It took me a long time to figure out that that's where it's at, because nobody in government wants you to know where that oath is.
And, Corey, how much of a low-risk, high-reward exercise would this be to actually get copies of oaths of all the freaking judges in the district where you reside.
No, there's absolutely no risk. If you're a state citizen, it is imperative that you know where these oaths are kept. And if you don't know where somebody has their oath of office at, and that to be able to get a certified copy of it, then that's something you absolutely have to learn how to do. You just got to figure it out. And same thing with this.
People glaze. That's why people just glaze, Corey. They can't even remotely get their arms around doing this. And you've done it. And we're posting it at agenda31.org, and it's value for value. And I think that it deserves, recognition in the form of support financially. So please check out the giving levels at agenda31.org on the far right side. So just subscribe. And let's get Corey a MacBook Air so he can set up his rig like I set mine up. That's what I'd look for.
Great.
All right.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. That's the whole idea. So, even the idea with the common law ID, that's many, many hours of research to come up with the idea that, hey, here's who I am. It seems really simple once you figure it out and once somebody shows you how to do it. But to have come up with that took a long time of just trying to figure it out, And there's nobody that's been leading my hand to say, here's how you become a state citizen. It's been just figure it out. And now we report this on agenda31.org. We report everything. This letter from the judge, very specifically, the place where I'm moving towards the judge, Judge Margines, who has now become, after I sent this letter to the original presiding judge, which it's a letter that was dated August 11th, 2015. It's on agenda31.org. It's document number CBE-08112015-2015. CGA, that was sent to Glenda Saunders. She was the presiding judge. And just in the subject line, the reference line, I put criminal conspiracy to impersonate a peace officer, and that is the courts openly referring to David Maggard as a chief of police when even David Maggard in court said he's not. Then I referenced the restraining order case. Then I referenced the felony filing of a false document. That's when David Maggard filed an oath at the California Secretary of State as well as the Orange County Recorder's Office. That document across the top of it says chief of police, and David Maggard is not the chief of police. He even admitted it. And so the purpose of this letter was, I even said in the letter that the purpose was to deny the court plausible deniability as far as knowing what's going on. And I find it interesting the timing that Judge Saunders is no longer the presiding judge.
That's interesting. It's fascinating, Corey.
The timing is very interesting. I also put in the deprivation of honest government services. So in this letter that I wrote on August 11th, I didn't expect a response from the presiding judge because typically what they'll do is whatever they get, unless it's something of profound matter, they will have either the assistant presiding judge or one of a supervising judge respond on their behalf. And so the response that I got from Margines, he was at the time the assistant presiding judge. Well, now he is the presiding judge since all this happened. I mean, it's just amazing what's going on.
Yeah, we've got the news release from October 9th. He gave Corey, we'll put it up on the show notes, and heralding his ascendancy.
Yes, yes. And so the part where a couple of things where Margines says that, whether or not, because I made mention that not only did the chief of office not have an oath of office on file and that he was not appointed by the city council, the assistant presiding judge, who is now the presiding judge, says that all of that was irrelevant to the issue of whether or not you were driving a motor vehicle without a license, and the evidence was properly excluded. It's not. It's straight up from their own rules. They're not allowed to accept evidence and then just take it out of the case. It's called a mistake or an error. If they accept evidence and error, it's an error. It stays in the record, and maybe the commissioner doesn't consider it, but for them to just pull stuff out of the record is ridiculous. The second part is when he answers, I'm going to read this entire paragraph. He says, you assert that you were convicted. This is Judge Margines' response to me. This is the letter dated September 22nd, 2015. And it's on the first page, the fourth paragraph down. You assert that you were convicted using the identity of a state-issued and state-maintained birth record in a conspiracy to deny you constitutionally secured rights and profit from the use of a title of nobility against your will and without any legitimate consent. The record does not support this contention. You were found guilty based on your statements and the testimony of Officer James Moore, which established beyond a reasonable doubt that you had been driving a motor vehicle on a public highway without a valid driver's license. That's the part that I think I have a very strong case personally against this Margines to show that he has violated his oath of office, because the record does not say that. It was clear in the record that the officer admitted, I showed him a common law ID, that the officer that the ticket, the actual citation, never made it into the case because it wasn't signed with my signature. It was a qualified signature that went in showing that I'm not the person on this citation. And the difference is that citation is in the specific sequence of first, middle, last, and my name is a given in surname or given in family name. And if they want to write a ticket that is in the same identification that I showed them, well, then, great, that's a whole different story. Or if they want to convict me in that name, they can. But they can't. Their own rules prevent them from doing anything other than using the specific sequence of first, middle, last on a citation. this judge would be assumed to know that this is the case. And looking at the record, which assuming he looked at the record, it would be very clear. So once I have his oath of office coming from the Secretary of State, go through a process of accepting the oath, which is very simple. You just write out, I accept the oath of Charles Margines, and it'll be dated whenever he dated it. I'll have that notarized and have the notary authenticated. And then the entire package going back, that means there's an offer from the judge and an acceptance from me for a promissory contract, a contract where he is promising to do something. It's in the category of specialty contracts. And then the next step is to begin the process of invalidating that contract. That there is a breach of contract, a judge, because the contract says that he will uphold and defend the Constitution. The Constitution prevents the United States from issuing titles of nobility. And I will require this judge to identify exactly what basis, on what authority, is he addressing me in the specific sequence of first, middle, last. And I'll be doing that by sending letter from a non-domestic location, the 3-cent mail, to be able to show where, what authority that letter is coming from. And so this will be a great foundation for a future court case that will be coming up, I'm sure.
It'll also be, you never identified yourself as somebody with the first, middle, last name during the whole procedure that this is all about.
Never.
And
I brought this issue up during the court time, everything. And, of course, their answer is absolutely has to be a no, because they
right.
can't let this out.
They can't. And so it is fascinating that Margines is now the grand poobah of the Superior Court, and he's the one who had he's the latest to have to stick his hand onto the tar baby.
That's right, and that's the whole point of this. And based on the Baca case that we had the video on Agenda 31 from Pasadena, which is federal courts in Pasadena, the federal courts. At least in that area there, I think it's the 9th District, boy, they were not kind to the state in the Baca case. Once the state had lost its plausible deniability of not knowing what's going on and, oh, these were just little mistakes, once it had come out that the state was lying to the court, the federal judges on the bench, at least in that Baca case, it is inspiring to watch, in my mind, to see how they treat the government when somebody in government can be proven that they are corrupt or that they're lying or that they're no longer trustworthy. Very fascinating case. So the whole game of this is to get a presiding judge in a position where he has violated his oath. And
you're saying that Margine is perpetuating titles of nobility with this letter.
Not only perpetuating, but every penny he's ever earned could be subject, and this is going back to the Charles Sprinkle case in the 70s when he sued Ronald Reagan and a whole bunch of other people here in California. They're earning an income from the government, and if that income is based on issuing titles of nobility, then their personal assets can be gone after. That's what Charlie Sprinkle did with great effect. And every penny, it's just like, when they come after somebody for drug laws and you might have one joint in your car and they end up taking a whole house away, all of that. Well, it's the same idea. Now, it would require taking on a presiding judge of a superior court in Orange County and going after his personal assets. That would require more skills than I presently have. But I do think that I have the ability to inflict significant harm to his professional career, hopefully invalidate his oath of office and remove him from the bench. That would be something that I think is certainly possible. Going after his personal assets for earning money based on a title of nobility, that begins to get very vicious. And Charlie Sprinkle showed how vicious and violent you can be when it comes to paper, because he sued the wives of all of these corrupt officials back in the day. All of them were named, Nancy Reagan, everyone else, and they could not get that lawsuit dismissed. The state did everything they could, and it was Charlie Sprinkle that let that lawsuit go after he had personal affirmations from Ronald Reagan that he would be left alone. And that's all he wanted, was to be left alone. And for the rest of his life, he mentioned that he only got pulled over one more time. And when he got pulled over, the highway patrol officer said, once he realized who he was, said, "I was just pulling you over to see if I could help you get to your destination." So it's a great example. And I think these people in Orange County are corrupt. They're evil. They are enemies of the people.
Right.
Crimes.
They're enemies of the residents. They're enemies of the residents. The powers that be look at the residents as the enemy, truly. Because yes.
And on top of that, they ignore the idea that somebody could be a state citizen, and they only apply that resident label to everyone.
Yeah, it's the presumption that everybody's a resident.
Yeah.
The challenge. I made fun of the Social Security Administration's letter calling it object-oriented code, and you can do object-oriented coding too, though. You have to do a little triangulation to understand what you're proposing here, Corey. It's not a simple matter, unfortunately.
No, it's not a simple matter, and that's why I'll be posting everything on the Agenda 31 website. You know, we'll make sure that all the documents get up so people can see how this works. It's a mind game. It's a cerebral game of chess. And so I need to establish in the record that who I am. And one of those
officer.
Well, I think so too, but now this is a whole different record. This would be the record of the engagement between me and Marjines, where he purportedly looked into the case and says, "Oh, the record doesn't support that." Bullshit, Marjines. So I'm going to create even more of a record to show that I have the ability, even though it says, you know, from my experience is just school of hard knocks.
I want to see the transcript he refers to badly. I want to help with that.
Yes.
It's going to take some cash to get it. Let me know. We'll raise the money. Let's get it done. This is the smoking gun here. That he says he would do the transcript.
As soon as we get a response, the laws in California for Public Records Act, they are now past the time period to respond. So I haven't gotten anything back from them. This wouldn't be the first time that the court violates the law with regard to public records.
So we'll
see what we go from there. The other part that I thought of the other day, which is on my checkoff list, is to get everything that Glenda Sanders forwarded to him. Because I put additional information in there, and now the next step is to make sure that he is absolutely aware that that Maggard committed a felony. Because once we get that into federal court, and we can show that this guy knew a felony had been committed, knew that fraud was going on with Irvine, knew that I had called it out in court, which I did. It's on the record as far as who they are, the oath of office, everything in the court, just steamrolling it. I've contacted the presiding judge. I've contacted the sheriff. I've contacted everyone that I can think of about the case with Maggard.
Let's be clear that the evidence that Maggard was not the chief of police is paramount in the brief that his attorney filed when you had the restraining order put out against Maggard and the hearing came up. And it's right there. We footnoted it numerous times. It explains that he's the head of public safety. And he's only technically the chief of police. And he was not appointed as chief of police by the council. He was appointed as the chief of the director of public safety by the city administrator. That's the evidence we're talking about, right? So it's So when you say that Glenda Saunders, you know, she had that information, you sent it to her, it's part of your package, right?
I sent her a letter from the city of Irvine, includes Irvine saying that there is no record of David Maggard having been appointed chief of police, that those records just don't exist. I sent her a copy of the oath of office that was filed, highlighting that the term chief of police is on that document being filed. If he would have filed an oath that only said director of public safety, then it would not have been a felony to file that document. But if he had filed an oath that only had director of public safety on it, then the city of Irvine would have no arrest authority because the city has to have a chief of police. That is the office created by the state.
And MAGA's out. He's out. And you've, this is just all you've sussed out so much stuff with these people. And it would be fascinating to see what Glenda Saunders said, because now if she had the evidence that which you said you sent her, and she set that along to Marjine, and Marjine ignored it, he's an entire baby now too.
Yeah, it's called misprision of felony. Judges are not allowed to ignore felonies.
Yeah.
And speaking with Ed Bretherton a few days ago, he mentioned that there's a process, which I'm unaware of, so I'd like to learn this, that you can actually go into court and require that the court create a record of you reporting a felony. And so that's something that after discussing it, Ed is thinking that it's more important to do that at the federal level, because you're talking about a guy at the top of the game at the state level. He is a superior court presiding judge. There's not too many people above him. And everybody in the state court system, their answer has to be no in order for them to protect their system.
Yeah.
At the federal level, it doesn't matter if you're a resident or one of the people of the several states. It doesn't affect the authority of the judges at the federal level. So you're much more likely to get an honest response on an issue like this when there's a diversity of citizenship, which, being one of the people, I'm a Californian, and them being in the United States, their jurisdiction is limited to the United States. They're crossing into the jurisdiction of the people. And so this will be I really do think this will be a fascinating next few months dealing with them.
I agree. And we appreciate everybody tuning in to this episode 53 of Agenda 31 on Halloween. Well, you're not tuning in, actually. It's recorded on Halloween. Poorly, I will add that. We understand that this audio playback may not meet the sterling standard we have set in the prior episodes. And we apologize. We'll be back to our normal rig soon. Until then, everybody, please keep asking yourself, what is your strategy to make a difference? You can sign up at agenda31.org. Please support the show. Take care, Corey. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Todd.
Bye-bye. Never land.